You're listening to Sportsnet Today on the official home of your Calgary Flames. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Gosh darn right, Yar. Hour two of Sportsnet Today. I'm Peter Heeshan. Cam is in the other room putting on a show producing today. Coming up in this hour, it's going to be Flames, Flames, and more Flames. We have guests coming on to help out with a view from the other side, talking about the Chicago Blackhawks. But right now, we're going to look at the Calgary Flames. A few changes going into the game this evening as they've made a couple of lineup adjustments. We will talk about those and a whole lot more. Your text, welcome, at 960-960. Someone texted in, did Francis write the promo for his own show? I don't know what you're talking about. I ad-libbed that whole thing. The Flames making a couple of lineup adjustments tonight. First of all, Jacob Markstrom is in. You have to have your number one goalie playing against the Chicago Blackhawks. Matt Coronato in. Nikita
Ochocha.
Yeah. We didn't figure it out when the Flames acquired him, and then I was gone on vacation for a little bit. So Nikita O is back in. Dryden Hunt and Joel Hanley are out. I like Coronato checking into the lineup. I don't love that he does so with Greer and Rooney, but I can't praise Sharon Govich for grinding his way from the fourth line into being a top line scorer on this team and then get upset when Coronato gets the spot on the fourth line. He is a player that we've wanted to see more from this season. Amazing training camp, preseason, all of that. He's just, every time he touches the puck, it just flies into the net. That has not been the case during the regular season, which has meant a few stints down in the American Hockey League. By the way, Rangers playing tonight against Coachella Valley in a massive matchup there. But for Coronato, what are you looking for from him here in the last dozen games of the season for the Flames?
I want to see a little bit of what we've seen. I want to see some consistency because the last few games that he's played, I've quite liked him. And we all know that he can shoot the puck. We all know that. And he's got a great shot. Offensively, he's a smart player. He's got some serious skill. His skating was a big question. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a big problem for him. His first stint, his second stint with the Flames. And the last call-up he got for a few games, There were times he was back checking and he was caught up with the play. He got a few really good chances to put the puck in the net by being in the right spot and also using his feet. And I've been happy with Coronato. I agree. I don't think the fourth line is where he needs to be.
Yeah.
And when you look at the lineup, it's hard to really see where you fit him because the Zary Kadri-Pospisil line has been great.
Yeah.
And Mangiapane Backlund-Coleman is the line. That's the line.
We'll get there.
Yeah, we will. Huberto, Sharon Govich, Kuzmenko is interesting, but offensively they actually have a lot of chemistry and they have a lot of skill together. So where do you fit him? I guess it's the fourth line, but his time on the fourth line hasn't really gone well for him.
No, and it's difficult, right? Like you want to see someone grind up and work their way through, but if it's not the right role, it's not the right role. And I go back and forth on it because like I don't think Mangiapane Backlund-Coleman is the way to go at this point for a number of different reasons with Mangiapane that I want to get to a little bit later on. But I do also think like a lot of those reasons are reasons why I don't think putting Coronato there actually makes a ton of sense right now. Like for Coronato, it would be great for Coronato to just like as a human being, he would get that ball rolling and he would look very good. But from a talent evaluation standpoint with the Flames, well, okay, so great. We've established he looks good on the line that literally 100% of the people who have played with those guys have looked good. So what do we have in this kid? Not a clue. So from a talent evaluation standpoint, I do, with all due respect, probably learn more about a kid playing with Rooney and Greer than I do playing with Backlund and Coleman. So I understand not wanting to put him in that spot and kind of making him grind his way up. And so if you're not going to put him there, like, yeah, you're not breaking up Zary Kadri-Pospisil at any point. Like that has stuck in a way that I wasn't anticipating. So fine. And Kuzmenko, Sharon Govich, and Huberto, I thought they were their best line the other night. And this is a team that even with 0.1% chance of making a playoff spot is still progressing like wins and losses matter. And so you can't just break up the top line just because we want to see what the kid who hasn't been able to stick with the big club looks like on a top line. So it like on the one hand, I do wish that he wasn't on the fourth line. On the other hand, I do understand where it's coming from a Flames standpoint.
Yeah, I do too. my goal, my perfect fit for that Backlund-Coleman line going forward is Jacob Pelletier.
Yes.
Obviously, he's not called up. He's not with the team right now. So, Mangiapane, Backlund-Coleman, it's worked for years. We know that, whatever. You're right. They're essentially out of the playoffs now. And
how dare you?
Yeah, they're all but out of the playoffs is what I should say. Having Mangiapane on that line, we know it works, but why do we have to have three veterans now? I'll call Mangiapane a veteran, I guess. Why do we have to have that line together when you can switch it up? Mangiapane didn't start the season with that line. They tried to get him going with Huberto. It just hasn't worked out for him. He's got 38 points in 68 games, and he's a plus seven. Like he's not having a bad season. It's not what I'm saying.
No,
but when you put Coronado with Rooney and Greer, who are good fourth liners, I fully believe that Rooney's had since coming back, he's been pretty good. Greer and Rooney, the second they get to the red line, they're putting the puck in deep.
Yeah,
and then they go battle for it, and Coronado, I'm not calling it a liability, but one of his weaknesses is that he's not a big guy. That's just not his game.
No.
But he's so effective in other ways. That's why the fourth line doesn't make sense to me for this. So I would hope to see that Mangiapane, Backlund, Coleman line split up. Keep Backlund and Coleman together and let someone run with them. Maybe even try Coronado there. Who knows? But
Coronado would be great there because you could have Backlund and Coleman do their puck retrieval thing.
Exactly.
And Coronado is just there to unleash hell with that shot that he has. So that's why it's a good fit. But that's also why, like, from a evaluation standpoint, like, oh, we're putting him in best case scenario. Great. We've learned nothing about this kid. I want to get into a bigger Mangiapane discussion. Before we get to that, let's hear from the coach. He's the one who put these lines together and is getting ready for this matchup tonight. Ryan Huska spoke with the media earlier today.
Start with a look at the opposition here tonight a little bit, if you could. I mean, you've seen him twice. Obviously, I haven't seen him with Connor Bedard in the lineup, but just what about the challenge and what you have to be prepared for a little bit here tonight?
Well, the skill, for sure. They have good speed to their game, and as you mentioned, we haven't seen them with Bedard in the lineup yet. So I think, like we talk more, or usually over the course of the year, it's always about us. If we do a good job with our checking game and we play tight as a team, we feel like we're capable of winning games any night, and this is no different for us. You know, the challenge against this team is we don't want to allow them to open us up, I guess, and be able to use their speed and skill off the rush. So we have to be really good in that area.
On that note, I know we look at the results, and obviously that's the most important thing, but what have you seen from your group here over the last couple of outings? And just, I know you like the work,
yeah.
But maybe the results that have to kind of come with it too.
Yeah, and that's an important thing. Like, it's one thing to say that, hey, yeah, we're close and good on that, but close isn't good enough. You know, what's it, the horseshoes, is that what they call it? I don't. But we have to find a way to turn those into wins, and that's the push that we have to have with our guys right now, is when we're in those games and you expect them every night that we're playing, you have to find a way to do things the right way to allow us to get wins. So if it's a play with the puck, if it's making sure your coverage is the way it should be, or finishing when you have that opportunity, those are key things for us.
What have you seen from Bedard's game? I know he hasn't played against you guys,
yeah.
but just your scouting of him.
He's a dynamic young player in this league for sure. He's got great one-on-one skills, and everybody knows he's got a great shot. So far, our challenge against him is not to give him a lot of time and space. And I think you probably hear that same message from a lot of teams that play against them.
A stretch like this, just how important is it to have all four lines and three D pairings? It's like five and eight, something like that. Just how important is it to have all of them going?
Yeah, well, we need that for our team. We talk a lot about it, that's when we're at our best, when we have everybody contributing. So when you get into stretches, when you're playing a lot of hockey, I think players like those stretches because it means there's less practice time, more game time. They get to go out and just play. But in order for our team to be successful, we have to rely on not just one or two people. It's our whole team, and they have to be going. So it's a great challenge for us to get going again here tonight.
Have you felt like the scoring chances, like maybe the number of them or the quality of them, have been well enough that or good enough that they should get some more goals out of them? Or?
In Vancouver, yes,
okay.
Without a doubt. Our last game at home against Buffalo, I think we could have looked at the net a lot more than we did. One, to get the puck there and look to create those second and third opportunities that are hard to defend.
What for you is a good number in terms of scoring chances in a game where you know that you've had enough looks that there should be some offense?
I think there's a difference between the scoring chances. So,
sure,
some are low-grade scoring chances. And if you can push your number to double-digit in the high-quality ones, then I think you're in pretty good shape. And then you're putting yourself in a position where you should be able to finish and generate if you're getting good chances like that. So the challenge for our team is when you want or when you need to get those chances, you have to work to get them. So you have to get in inside. You have to do the right things away from the puck to put yourselves in positions to score, and it's going to be important for us tonight.
I know we talked a little bit about Bedard, but you got your own rookie Connor. Do you think he would, you know, look and get excited about an opportunity to, you know, to go head to head here tonight?
I'm sure. Everybody would. Older guys too. Like, there's, you always look at the best young players in the game, and when guys haven't had a chance to see them live and in person. The first time you watch him, you recognize that what people say about him, he's the real deal. So, as I mentioned before, Connor's a Western guy. Both Connors are Western guys, so I think they know quite a bit about each other, and I'm sure ours is excited to play.
What is it about Bedard's shot that is unique to you?
I think it's just the release that he has. Like, he's able to pull it in, and he snaps it really quickly, and I think it makes it difficult on contenders.
Hey, so why do you think Dickinson's actually the real best player on Chicago? No, this is going to be like, yeah, it's the first time you see Bedard, so that's going to be a whole lot of fun. If the Blackhawks only face the Calgary Flames, they would have a significantly better record, as they've had at least a bit of success against Calgary.
They'd be in a playoff spot.
Right, yes. Well, they'd at least be 500. They're 1-1 against Calgary so far this season. But for... The first time they played I think it was the Blackhawks game, where everyone going in was saying, well, it's a trap game. We can't let it be a trap game. We have to take these guys seriously. And boat raced. So that was a bit of an issue. Came back and with a stunning 1-0 performance in the next one. I don't know what we can take away from a Flames-Blackhawks game in 2024 on March 26th, but boy, howdy, are we going to try watching this one tonight. I'm excited to see Bedard. I suppose they have other players. I'll find out about them as the game goes on. Anything before we get into a bit more on the Flames, anything from the Chicago standpoint you're looking forward to tonight?
One thing is they have a guy named Landon Slaggart on their team who just got called up. So anyways, I just wanted to mention that. It's a great name.
It's a made-up name.
Yeah, it has to be.
Not a real person.
Like, this team is a disaster. We know that. You know, the Corey Perry thing early on the season was just kind of, you know, they had to get rid of him. Whatever, that happened.
Yeah.
At the same time, they have a Connor Bedard. So, yeah, I'm curious to see how the Flames play against a team like this, because the 1-0 game against Chicago, man, I don't really want to go back and rewatch that one. And the 4-3 loss earlier on in the season, like, I mean, this Chicago team, they score 2.2 goals per game. That's not good. As a matter of fact, it's so bad that it's last in the league. We have not seen the Flames play against Connor Bedard. So, yeah, I'm intrigued. I'm kind of excited for the game. I mean, I've gone out of my way to watch some Blackhawks games this year, and it's literally for one guy. It's not because they have Nick Foligno. It's not because of that. It's because they have that guy that wears 98. So,
big, yeah. Seth Jones fan.
Yeah, I'm a huge Seth Jones fan. But I'm excited for today's game, and I'm just curious to see how they match up.
Yeah. The big story for me the last little bit, we kind of did the thing yesterday. What are you looking for from the last 12 games of the season? And a lot of people on social media, predictably but also hilariously, said 12 losses. But the thing that I want to see is less Mangiapane on the Backlund Coleman line. We get it. He can play with those guys. But we are at a point now where that is feeling like a waste to me. Like, that is a spot that I think you can get similar type of production out of without needing the guy making $5.8 million to be in that spot. And Mangiapane in general, I am very, I think, rapidly falling out of love with this particular player. He scores 35 goals in the 21-22 season in 82 games. In the 150 games since, he has 30 goals. Whatever touch he had around the net has just disappeared. I think he... anecdotally, feels like he leads the team in missed shots. It has been incredibly frustrating, because coming into this season, we talked about, I remember having conversations on this radio station, like, okay, they've traded to Foley. Where are the extra goals coming from? And the first answer consistently was, well, there's no way Mangiapane scoring less than 17 this year. And he's going to have to do some work in the last 11 games of the season or 12 games of the season to make that a reality. And so I think when you're having a player who is giving you average to maybe a bit above average results on a line that gets that from freaking everybody, but that's the only line he fits on, I start to have concerns about this player. Like you said with Pelche, this is a spot I would like to see him on. We talked about with Coronado why maybe Pelche or Coronado in that spot doesn't necessarily yield you the most organizational information about those players, but even like honestly a Greer at this point to just like, you can get that spot rolling, put Mangiapane with Rooney and Coronado and try that. Like I need to see something else there because I need to see what else there is with this player. Like if he can only fit with those three guys, then what do we have? Cause you can get that from anyone else.
I don't think he doesn't concern me as someone that can only play with those guys. Now, what Mangiapane brings, and yeah, two seasons ago, 35 goals. It was awesome. It was electric. He had a great shot. He was picking corners from in tight. It seemed like you'd pick the top corner from inside the crease.
Yeah.
The shooting touch has gone, and you're right, like missing the net a lot, and it's noticeable. Everyone misses the net here and there, obviously. It is very noticeable with him. And when Mangiapane doesn't have his, I think that's his best weapon. And when that's not clicking like it isn't, he is just a player who's good at everything. And like, I mean, good, like thumbs up, like solid, you know,
right on.
Like it's, he's there and he's not a liability, but what does he bring if he doesn't have his shot other than, you know, just like a, and that's why that line works. He brings speed and he can play. He's solid defensively from, you know, as a forward. He's just, he doesn't have any traits that make him, that put him above someone when he's like that. Right. And that's why I would love to see someone else on that line. And yeah, like when you put him on the fourth line, I don't think he becomes any less of a player. Like anybody plays with Backlund and Coleman gets better. I didn't even get close to playing any high level of hockey. I think I could play not bad. That's a joke, but I need to see the switch up now, especially towards the end of the year.
Yeah, no. And like, I like a lot of the stuff that he does. The problem is he is now getting paid to do way more than he has been doing. And you look at that, the 35 goal season, he had a shooting percentage of almost 19%, which has dipped to 9 and 11 in the last 2 years. 8 of his 35 goals were on the power play. Since then, he has 4 power play goals total. So I do think that he was a bit of a victim of the power play all of a sudden being a bit of a disaster, although he is a part of it. So maybe like being part of the solution would help out a little bit. Like he is, I think, a fine middle six type of a guy, but he's being paid $5.8 million. You kind of need more out of that. And so I don't think we are getting back to 35 goal Andrew Mangiapane. I don't know if we'll get to 25 goal Andrew Mangiapane consistently anymore. And so like, I wonder what you do with this guy going forward with this Flames unit, where it's like, I'd rather see what Peltier looks like in that spot. I'd rather see what Coronado can do in an area like that. If Pospisil starts to fall off on that line a little bit, put him there, put Coronado up with Zari and Kadri. Would love that sort of a formation. Like it feels like he's taking up a spot that is really valuable on this Flames team right now. And yeah, I kind of like half sarcastically put out like maybe Rooney and Coronado. I actually wouldn't mind that. Just to see, like, what does this guy do when he is kind of the driver there? Because I do like what he can do on the forecheck. It's the touch around the net that is just so concerning to me. And this guy has scored goals everywhere he's gone, right? Like, 51 goals in 59 games in the Ontario Hockey League in his last year there. Two-time 20-goal scorer in the American Hockey League. 17-18, he had 21 goals in 39 games in the AHL. Comes to the NHL, it takes him a little bit, but then 17-18, 35, and 17. Now 13 goals this season. So like, you can very easily tell me like, hey, he didn't just all of a sudden forget how to score goals, but there is something going on where the range finder is just a little bit off. And even when he gets in tight, he's putting it right into a pad or right into the crest of the goalie. Like there's just something off with it that I think needs to kind of correct itself if he wants to be a part of the longer term plan here in Calgary.
Yeah. And you've seen with Mangiapane, when he gets the puck on, he gets the puck in the neutral zone, he has the skill to take it up himself, and he has the skill to beat people. He actually has some great hands too. It's just, it hurts to say this, but like, you know, he was a sixth round pick. He was drafted 166th overall in the 2015 draft, and you know, started with Stockton and then made it to the Flames, and he's a homegrown product, but look at the logjam. It's like, I'm not going to call it a logjam, but Zeri came up and Pospisil came up and Coronado, and we saw Klapka and we saw Schwint and we saw, you know, some other players come up from the Wranglers this season. You still have Klapka down there. Peltier's still down there. Schwint has proven that he can play NHL minutes. I'm not saying he was anything spectacular, but There's
I actually kind of liked him on the fourth line as a fourth liner.
I did too. And you gave those guys, you know, a cup of coffee in the NHL. I hate to say that Mangiapane's taking a spot, but he's a UFA next year. He's, you know, he's gone next year.
Yeah, he's one of the expiring contracts.
He's expiring. Yeah. So I don't know what they do, but it's hard to say we're going to sign him to another big contract. Like, he's making 5.5 right now. It's a lot of money for a player that's got 13 goals. So
he turns 28 in about a week. So like, are you signing him to a 5-year extension and he's 33 when the goal totals have now probably dropped in the last two seasons? The penalty minutes have gone up, man. as it was pointed out on the text line, which is another thing that has been aggravating, is he has taken some incredibly detrimental penalties at times this
season.
Those
are Sam Bennett penalties.
100%. He has absolutely played that role to perfection in a very, very frustrating way. So I would like to see some other players in that spot, and I do think it kind of frees some stuff up. So we will see what happens with that particular player. I kind of made the joke off the top. Markstrom gets the start in net tonight, because, you have to, against the 31st best team in the National Hockey League. I don't know how many Markstrom starts we're going to have with the Calgary Flames the rest of the way, and thus in the rest of the career of one Jacob Markstrom. I'm not going to say like that this is a special moment and make sure you remember this, you can tell your grandkids, but I do wonder how many more Markstrom starts we get the rest of the way.
Yeah, I don't think anybody knows, honestly. And I feel for the guy because he's been the Flames MVP this year. And, you know, I'm not going to go dive deep into the trade stuff again, but
it's been covered.
Yeah, I think we've covered that enough. But I feel bad for the guy, and he has to split starts with Wolf. Like, I don't think it's going to be a 50-50 split, but I think it'll be closer to like a 70-40 or a 75-35, right? Wolf is finally getting some consistent time in the NHL, and it's towards the end of the season, and the games don't matter, which kind of sucks. But I don't know what the split's going to be. You can't tell Markstrom, hey, we're going to give this guy most of the starts. It's not going to happen. First of all, it's a terrifying guy, and I'd never want to say that to him if I was the coach, whatever, but I don't know what happens with Markstrom going forward, but you can't give him a majority of the starts.
Yeah, no, I would agree. That being said, I am picking him up in fantasy tonight, so just give me a second there. Just going to hit confirm on that.
The offensive firepower of the Blackhawks.
Right, exactly. Yeah, both Flames goalies were on waivers in my league. I was just waiting to see who got confirmed the starter. I'll be honest, I thought I'd get a bit more pushback on the text line on a relatively anti-Mangiapane thing. And look, like, I think Mangiapane is the type of player you win with. I just don't know if it's at 5.8 on your second or prominent line in the NHL. But there's been quite a bit of like red flag and 100% on this guy. So really interesting that things have turned that much on that particular player. Reiner, we are coming to you from the DL Basement Systems downtown studio. For Doug Lacey's Basement Systems wet basement, we have a lasting solution to keep your basement dry. If you experience any water in your basement, contact Basement Systems. They are all things basement-y. Visit dlbasementsystems.com. I would imagine with all this snow out, eventually I'm hoping that will melt. And so that's going to cause quite a few wet basements. So absolutely check out Doug Lacey's crew there with Doug Lacey Basement Systems. Check them out, dlbasementsystems.com. All right, that is a ton of analysis on the Calgary Flames. What about the Blackhawks? We break it down. Charlie Remouliotis. Don't think I said that right, but I said it quickly and confidently, so it's fine. I'll be chatting with Charlie, who covers the Blackhawks, next here on Sportsnet Today on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. It's a Calgary Flames game day as the Flames take on the Blackhawks of Chicago today. We have your coverage basically throughout the day. Flames talk at 4, warm-up at 5:30, games at 6, post-game is after that. That's how that works. So we got your Flames and Blackhawks coverage here. Last segment, we talked about what we're looking for from the Flames this season. This segment, let's hear about the other guys as the Blackhawks insider for NBC Sports Chicago, Charlie Remouliotis, joins the program now. Charlie, how are you today?
Hey, what's going on?
Not much. Just getting ready for Flames Blackhawks tonight. For Calgary fans who exclusively watch Calgary games, the first viewing of Connor Bedard as he had that injury thing the two times the Flames faced them didn't stop the Blackhawks from winning one of the games, which was handled very responsibly out here. But as the season winds down, what's the vibe around Chicago right now with this Blackhawks team?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a different feeling than last year, where it feels like every other day, the story was what's going to happen with Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews. And that there was kind of just this cloud around the team going into the trade deadline. And this year it's just been, hey, even though they're losing on a nightly basis, Connor Bedard can do something special every single night. That if they lose 4-1 in a game, well, Connor scored a pretty goal or he set up a really nice play to kind of just make the Blackhawks a little bit more watchable. So, yeah, it has been a pretty difficult season, but I think the fans expected it to be this way. And if they get some lottery luck again, like, I don't think they're going to mind either.
No, yeah, it seemed like everyone kind of knew what this season was going to be. And then Lady Luck has not necessarily been on the Blackhawks side either. With Taylor Hall, obviously the Perry situation was what it was. But there was it wasn't just Bedard, but then Bedard goes down with an injury. So a team that was already kind of walking a bit of a tightrope, then had some injury issues on top of that. But with that, I do think it gives the opportunity for some players to step up. Obviously, a lot of the focus is on Bedard, but who else this season has kind of stepped up for the Blackhawks?
Yeah, that was a pretty wild stretch earlier in the year. I think at one point the Hawks had 9 players on injured reserve, and they had more cap money tied up to the injured players than they did to the active players. That was wild. And so, yeah, there are some young guys on the roster like the Lucas Reichels and Kevin Korchinski. Those guys are still kind of going through some growing pains. I think Reichel specifically, we saw him about a month or 5 weeks at the end of last season after the trade deadline. He was really good with Athanasiou and Kurashev. And I'm pretty sure he had a really, really solid game against Calgary where he had 3 points. He has just not looked himself this season. He had a little bit of a mini stint in Rockford in the AHL for about a month, and his confidence has definitely grown. And then same with Korchinski. Unfortunately, he's not eligible for the AHL this year because of the CHL rules. So he's gone through some ups and downs where he probably could have benefited from a stint in the AHL, but he's still shown some flashes. The one guy that has really, really impressed in Chicago this season has been Alex Vlasic. I mean, he's a guy that was drafted in the second round. He was more touted as a defensive defenseman. And you look at his numbers and it probably still is that way, but he is a really solid defensive defenseman, but he's also honed his all around game where he was on the power play at different points this year. He's been logging north of, 20, 21 minutes a night playing on the top pairing consistently. And so, yeah, he's been a really nice find for the Blackhawks. And I think that's a guy that I think at one point in the year, he had like a plus 15 rating. And it was like the rest of the team was like negative 20. It was very weird. But anytime he was on the ice, like, good things happened for the Blackhawks.
For Connor Bedard, the Freudian slip there. Obviously, you have had access to a lot of very talented players in Chicago relatively recently. It's been a pretty good stretch of Blackhawks hockey, a couple down years there. But either way, there's been a lot of talented players that have rolled through there. What has stood out to you about Connor Bedard this season?
Yeah, well, he gets so much praise for his shot, and rightfully so. I mean, he's got easily a top 5 shot in the NHL, but he is such a good playmaker that he like rarely gets credit for it. I mean, well, not rarely, but it's just like, you hear about his shot coming out of junior in the draft and you're like, God, this guy could easily have about 60 to 70 to 80 assists in the NHL because he's just as good of a playmaker as he is a shot, a shot maker too. And I think that is what has made him is going to make him a lethal player in the NHL, because I think back to when Patrick Kane broke into the NHL as a rookie, he was predominantly a playmaker. Like, he wanted to set up guys. He normally had a lot more assists than he had goals. And anytime there would be a 2-on-1 or a 2-on-1 rush, it would be like 80-20 that Kane was going to pass. Well, a few years later, it really wasn't until like 2014 where Kane started becoming more of a shooter. Like, it was more 50-50. And that made him even more dangerous than he was prior, which is a scary thought. And I think with Connor, he naturally has the shot that is just going to deceive, like, all the goaltenders are thinking shot with him. but he's such a naturally gifted playmaker as well that, you know, he can sell the shot and then set up another teammate because everyone in the building thought he was going to shoot it. So it's been special to watch, and I imagine that's just going to grow over the next few years.
I'm just looking at his stats. It's comical to see his junior stats his last year. He had 20 points in 7 playoff games, 143 points in 57 games with the Pats. But like you said, a lot of the focus is on the shot. 71 goals last year in the regular season, 10 in the postseason. But he basically equaled both of those totals with his assists. And yeah, if that playmaking ability is on par with the goal scoring, no one's questioning that this kid is obviously special. But there's just something really, really dynamite about this kid.
Yeah, for sure. And I know a lot gets made of the plus minus there. And it's like that guy is on the ice in pretty much every situation. And even those 6-on-5 situations at the end of the game when the Hawks are trailing, like a lot of times those are empty net goals and he's getting docked for it because he's one of the guys that's on the ice. So and I think back too, if he didn't miss that whatever 5 weeks it was with a broken jaw, he would probably be on pace to finish with a point per game. And to do it with a roster like this, where Taylor Hall got hurt a few weeks into the season, they had 9 players on injured reserve at one point. I mean, I can't even imagine what those numbers could look like in a couple years when they actually have a really strong supporting cast around him.
The supporting cast is kind of where I want to go next. There was a lot of talk because he's, it seems like, a generational talent coming into the National Hockey League. At the same time, there's really tall French dude coming into the NBA who's kind of the same thing in Victor Wembanyama. And so for me, anyway, as a follower of both sports, there's always going to be kind of this side-by-side comparison. With Wemby in the NBA, for a lot of fans who look at San Antonio, it's like, okay, this kid is everything we thought he would be, so we need to get a winner around him right now. For the Blackhawks, I think it's very clear Connor Bedard is kind of that dude. So how much pressure is there now to kind of advance the schedule a little bit for Chicago and get this kid playing a few more meaningful games next season?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think the Blackhawks are trying to be really careful with how they utilize their cap space, because if they do start to spend a little bit more money on free agents, maybe a year too early, or start acquiring players via trade a year too early, then it kind of stunts. You know, let's just say hypothetically the Blackhawks win the lottery and they get Macklin Celebrini. Well, it's like, okay, well, Bedard and Celebrini are going to be the 1 and 2 highest paid players on the team in, you know, 4 years from now when the Blackhawks are playoff contenders again, and you still got the Seth Jones contract on the books, and you got to pay Kevin Korchinski and all these other young players that are coming up in the pipeline that you don't want to bring any longer term contracts to interfere with what the new core might get down the road. So it is going to be a delicate balance, because I agree with you. I don't think they can go into next year rolling it back with the same roster. I think you have to try to find those hidden gems where you get some free agents where they're quality players, but they only come for 1 or 2 years and they kind of help be the bridge to the next great Blackhawks team. And maybe it benefits that player as well. I don't know if you, like, I was thinking like Jordan Eberle would have been a really good fit for the Blackhawks had he not re-signed with Seattle. Like, you know, a guy that's 30 years old, he can easily probably score 30 goals on Connor Bedard's line. And then maybe that sets him up down the road for another contract somewhere else. Just an example like that. I'm not sure who would fit that criteria now via free agency, but if the Blackhawks can identify those players and just put a little bit more of a stronger supporting cast around Connor on a shorter term deal, I think that would benefit both parties.
Well, and you look at what they have kind of in the cupboard right now. They have, by my count, I believe it's 13 picks in the first 2 rounds the next 3 years. So if they wanted to go out and maybe acquire that player by way of trade with, like you said, not a long-term contract, but a couple of years on a deal, that they have a bit of draft capital to get aggressive with as well.
Yeah, no question. And I think that's one of the things Kyle Davidson had said last year. I think it was, I can't remember which trade it was. It might've been the Toronto trade for Jake McCabe, where they kind of punted it on a 2025 or 2026 first. And they wanted to defer because they wanted to space out their first round picks. And if down the road, you know, in 2026 or 2027, where the Blackhawks have some draft capital, like they have maybe the assets for them aren't as valuable as far as just actually making those picks. And the draft picks themselves are valuable because they can go trade it for a player that could help the team now and in the future. So yeah, definitely a good observation by you too.
For the Blackhawks, Taylor Hall, I would think they were hoping for a little bit more contribution than 4 points this season. Obviously injuries, a bit of an issue there. How does he fit into the short-term plans for this team going into next year?
Yeah, that was a really tough injury for the Blackhawks, because I think they identified him specifically as the guy that was going to be Connor Bedard's left winger all season. And for him to suffer that ACL injury early in the season, where it's not even like they had some big runway where they could build some momentum, and maybe it came like halfway through the season or whatever, but it came so early that it was like the Blackhawks needed to find a way to find a permanent winger for Bedard, for 5 months. And so that was a tough injury. Taylor Hall has been skating for the last couple weeks in a non-contact jersey, which is a positive sign, but there's zero chance that he returns this season. It's more just making sure that he's kind of on track. And I imagine he'll get a good off season workout in where he's not actually rehabbing. Maybe he gets cleared to, start taking contact or start doing some more serious drills like in April. So he can get that conditioning. But yeah, I think I think next season they're really hoping that Taylor Hall can kind of be a fixture on that line with Bedard, because Bedard and Philip Kurashev have really developed a solid chemistry for the last 3-4 months. So if they can kind of find a permanent player on the left side, that would definitely help for Connor's development.
Looking at the rest of this team, Seth Jones on the blue line, you talk about long-term contract. He certainly has one at $9.5 million for a while now. How has he kind of fit in with this team and taken on maybe a bit of a leadership role with this group as it has got very young very quick?
Yeah, he had a tough start to the season. I think it was like the first 28 games he didn't have a single goal. And then he went down with a shoulder injury. It was like an SC joint injury that he was originally supposed to be out like two weeks. And it ended up being more of a 5-week injury. And since he's returned, he has been like, you'll probably see it again tonight. He might be right up there in the skater leading in shot attempts. And he joked around this morning saying like, I might have 12 shot attempts and only 5 of them hit the net, but I want to have a shooting mentality. And so I think that's where you've seen, like, before his injury, I think he was averaging like 2.2 shots per game. And since the injury, the last 30 or so games, he's been averaging 3.2, which is like a full shot per game more than he was averaging prior to. And it's reflected. He has 6 goals in his last 29 games. So I think, he would have liked to have that production at the beginning of the season, but it's starting to come the second half as he's taken on more of a shooting mentality.
Obviously, this has not been a season necessarily focused on wins and losses. And like out here, the Flames have a 0.1% chance of making the playoffs, which has led to a lot of dumb and dumber gifts, but also a lot of conversations about like, okay, what do we need to see? What are we looking for going into next year? So from the Blackhawks perspective, we've established Bedard's dope. What else are you looking for from the Blackhawks in the last dozen games or so this season?
I think it's going to be more individual play. Like, I want to see how Lucas Reichel performs these final 10 games, because they have a lot of players that are either pending UFAs or pending RFAs. Lucas Reichel is one of those pending RFA guys. Alex Vlasic is one of those pending RFA guys. So I just want to see how those guys finish and what the whole body of work will be by the end of the season, when you start to break the numbers down and say, okay, what contracts do these young players deserve? What's the number going to look like? Can they carry some confidence into next season because they finished a little strong, which, I don't know if that's more of like a rallying cry, like, hey, let's finish strong with 10 games left, even though the first 70 games were a bit of a disaster. But I think for some of the young guys, maybe they can at least take some sort of positive momentum into the summer, and they're not feeling terribly, bad about how maybe they performed over the course of the entire season.
Excuse me. What about Luke Richardson? How do you think the coach has handled this season so far?
He's been awesome. And I know maybe from the outside, it doesn't look like he's maybe having like a strong impact, just if you look at the record. But I think back to last year and even at different points this year, this year it's been weird. They play the tough teams well, but they play the bottom feeders poorly. Like they were just coming off that trip on the West Coast where, they didn't play great in Anaheim. They didn't play great in San Jose, and they still found a way to rally. And then even the last week, the game when San Jose came to town to Chicago, like the Hawks got off to a terrible start. And so if you look at some of the wins this season, they've beaten Toronto twice. They've beaten Colorado. Like they've beaten some weirdly good teams. They've beaten Winnipeg twice. So they play hard. The problem is they just don't have the talent to match up with some of those upper echelon teams, even though they have been oddly having success against them. But I think once the team does fill out the roster a little bit, you're going to see more of that reflected in how good of a coach Luke is, because even in the San Jose game on Saturday, he's typically a very mild-mannered head coach. And there was one point during one of the TV timeouts in the first period after they fell behind 2-0 in San Jose where he laid into the team. And Ryan Donato after the game said that was scary to see because we rarely see Luke like that. But they ended up responding and they overcame it and beat San Jose 5-4. So I think just little things like that, I think Luke does a really good job at picking his spots and when to do those kinds of things.
I'm curious about the overall Chicago sports market right now and where the Blackhawks find themselves. It can be tough sometimes getting traction with a season like this, but with a player like Bedard, that becomes a little bit easier. The Chicago is legendary sports town with the teams having kind of varying levels of success right now. What's kind of the overall city of Chicago feel around the Blackhawks and where are they fitting in on the sports landscape here in 2024?
It's funny because it feels like all the Chicago sports teams, they win and they lose together. like when the Blackhawks were winning Stanley Cups in the dynasty era, the Cubs ended up breaking the World Series streak and the Bears were going to the playoffs. Then, you know, it was very weird. And now it seems like every Chicago team is kind of down in the dumpster. So I think Chicago, the Blackhawks had the most excitement of any sports team because of Connor Bedard, but given the Bears situation now and trading Fields and all the hype around Caleb Williams, like I think Chicago fans are pretty excited about the Bears, but the Blackhawks are definitely up there as far as interest in Chicago sports fans because of 98 and just the watchability factor that he brings to the city every night.
It is funny you say they all kind of mirror each other. Even the Bears, like, well, you guys got a number one pick. We want a number one pick. And there's a lot of excitement around that one as well.
Yeah, and back, it could have been back-to-back years, too, where, you know, if the Blackhawks win the lottery again this year, that's 2 years in a row where the Blackhawks and Bears had the first overall picks. Like, I'm not sure if that's ever happened in this city before.
That would be quite the thing. If it happened in any city, that would be quite the accomplishment for sure. And lastly, I guess for you, like these seasons can be a little bit long at times, but again, you have a very exciting player. You've had some young stories kind of pop up as the season has gone along. What's it been like covering this team throughout the year?
I will admit it feels like I've written the same story about 4 or 5 times this season after a game. So hopefully I haven't gotten a little bit too redundant, but honestly, this has been, I think last year was a lot more stressful because every day it was like, what's the latest on Kane and Taves? You know, this year it's kind of like the new or the old, the past era is in the rearview mirror and it's all about looking forward to the future. Having said that, because some of the young guys are still so far away, like they got Oliver Moore and Sam Renzel and Frank Nazar, like all these players that are going to be part of the future for the Blackhawks moving forward, like they're still in juniors in college. And so it's, I think I'm just looking forward to some of those players getting to the NHL. So then we can evaluate, okay, where do these guys fit into the longer term puzzle? And so hopefully that's going to happen in the next year or two.
Charlie, this was a blast, man. Enjoy the game tonight. Enjoy the rest of the season. We'll talk again soon.
Awesome. Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. There is Charlie Remeliotis joining us from NBC Sports Chicago, the Blackhawks insider, joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. I've been doing this job in various different forms for, 13 years now. I've had not exactly seasons like, oh, generational talent, but the team sucks. But I've had like, boy, this is kind of slogging towards the end. But it does seem like that there is, for one obvious reason and maybe a few others, a bit of reason for optimism in Chicago, Shan.
Yeah, I mean, having the best prospect we've seen since Connor McDavid probably helps a little bit. Yeah, but like the play is poor.
And yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
No. But what Charlie said at the end there is, you know, all these guys are in college or in junior and finally going to start. You know, to see them make their way to the NHL. It's hard not to be optimistic if you're a Chicago fan. But last year it makes sense because it was a disaster trying to figure out what was going to happen with Patrick Kane, and we didn't know what was going on with Jonathan Taves, and a lot of players needed out, and they just it was ugly last year. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what Chicago does in the next couple of years, and I think they're going to be a playoff team for a while, and I don't know, say 4 or 5 years.
They have $38 million in cap space next year, 63 the year after that, which is a lot.
That's a lot.
The one thing I don't want them to do is like, well, we have cap space and we need to be good right now. Let's get Elias Lindholm, $10 million. You know, like you don't want them to fall into that trap where we need to be good right away. Free agent X will overpay for everyone because cap dollars don't matter. And now all of a sudden, oh man, we are kind of screwed here. Like you don't want them to fall into that trap around Connor Bedard. All right. That is going to do it for the program today. A reminder, you see him on Flames broadcast and you read him on sportsnet.ca. Eric Francis goes solo every Friday at 5 p.m. for Flames Talk, the Eric Francis Hour. The franchise not afraid to ask the tough questions to get the information Flames fans want. It is a must listen for not most, not some, but every Flames fan, and it's brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. The Alberta horse racing and breeding industry has an $83 million positive economic impact in Calgary annually. Visit thehorses.com. 18+. Please play responsibly. This has been a blast hanging out with y'all the last couple of days. My name is Peter Klein. You can find me on social media at Primetime Klein. The podcast is called Couch Potato Diary. You guys have been great. Enjoy the Flames and the Blackhawks tonight. Flames talk at 4, pregame at 5:30. Shan, you were great. Cam, you were there. This has been Sportsnet 960, The Fan.